Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions, just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code AndySgirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com. with code Andy's Girls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine. My personality, just like my credit score, is a perfect 10.
You may think I'm all about the mess, but I'm all about the money. Guys, I'm actually really proud of us. I have to tell you, I think both of our taglines this week were very good. I'm into it. I thought I had a little laugh after my accountant called me to let me know I'm never going to get out of debt, and I just wanted to incorporate it into this week's tagline. And so I'm so glad that ours are both. We're both booked and busy. Okay, you guys, we're booked and busy on this week's Andy's Girls.
And busy.
Booked and busy. And guys, it's Andy's Girls, obviously. What if I was like, it's bitch sesh. I'll take over. Guys, listen, it's Andy's Girls episode 185. And I am so excited to be joined by one of my favorite people coming back on the people's couch. He is a news and entertainment journalist and pop culture expert whose YouTube page and social media I am beyond obsessed with. I just watched his exclusive Kiki with the Grand Dame of Potomac, and you could tell she loves him just as much as I do. It's none other than Richie Sky. Richie Sky!
We're in the building!
We're in the business. But that is a word that didn't make any sense. I think I was saying building and business at once, and it came out, and it was a beautiful medley here on the Bitch Sesh, People's Couch. Richie Sky, how are you this Friday morning? We're recording at 6 a.m.
I'm great. It's been an insane week, but I'm glad it's the weekend. I'm really glad.
Technically, it is the weekend.
Yes.
If we are still believing that days are a thing, the weekend is upon us. And I'm super into your optimism in thinking that our weeks have structure. I think that is so wonderful and optimistic of you. I have a friend, shout out to Dylan Hafer, a friend of the pod, friend of me, who was like, oh my God, there's like another day in the work week tomorrow. He said that yesterday. And I was like, okay, braggy. All right. I get it. Yeah. You with your job. Okay. Tell me again that Friday means you're working somewhere. Okay. Understood. Hashtag consulting during quarantine. Hashtag just heavy debt. Heavy debt. So Richie Sky, first off, so you moved since the last time we recorded, since the last time you were at Andy's Girls, you moved to...
I am now in Washington, D.C.
Wow. So how did that come about? Because you were living in Miami, right?
Mm-hmm.
What inspired this? Are you just that obsessed with every Hugh Beauty that you noticed it wasn't available at your local Target and you were like, I need to get to the headquarters? Oh my God. Word on the street.
Right. Word on the street. No, we moved because me and my fiance wanted to be closer to our
Mazel tov.
Yeah. We wanted to be closer to our families, and our families both live in like Southern Virginia and like North Carolina, probably about 45 minutes from each other, which is odd. Oh. But we knew that we wanted to be in a major city. So it was like DC was an obvious choice because this is also where we met. So we just came back here.
Wow. And were you thinking about this move previous to COVID, or was this inspired by, you know, the everyday shit show?
No, it was actually something that we had planned on doing. And we had talked about this time frame last year, before any of this happened. We knew that we were moving back here. So when everything kind of hit with the pandemic, it was like, okay, obviously now it's more important than ever to be able to just be able to get to our families if we need to. But obviously I haven't been able to visit my family because, you know, of the pandemic. But yeah, I mean, it was always in the works.
I can't imagine wanting to live closer to my family. So shout out to you for having those family values. I'm like, can I get further away? I hear Alaska is gorgeous this time of year. What can I tell you? Richie Sky, so listen, where were you when you heard the news about Biden, about our president-elect?
So interesting. It was very interesting. It was Saturday. I spent all Saturday editing an interview with Anna Kinkosis from The Real Housewives of Miami, but she's my former co-host.
Oh my God, I love Awesome.
Yeah, she's my former co-host from when we were co-hosting a morning show in Miami. And so we were texting back and forth as it was happening. It was awesome. It was completely awesome. I didn't get to go out and really celebrate that day. My fiance called me while I was doing a video for my channel. It was just a I was working all day.
It was still awesome. So can I ask you about Anna?
Yeah.
I'm so curious. You know, I've interviewed Leah Black several times on Andy Scrolls because I'm a big fan of going to Miami and using that as a write-off. But I don't know that in our conversations I have brought this up. So AGs, if you can remind me, slide into the Andy Scrolls archives. I don't know that I asked her specifically about the editing around the season 3 reunion, but that is a topic that seemingly heavily features Anna. I don't know if you remember all this stuff, but when she like brought a folder of info about whatever, and then this was like the precursor to Adrian Malouf and surrogacy, because her cast member who she was trying to surprise at the reunion was able to successfully get a lot of that info removed from the broadcast. So what you have now when you watch the season 3 reunion are some like edits to faces and reactions that don't necessarily make sense when it comes to the edited episode. Like there are points where Leah looks so emotional, but it doesn't make sense in the context of the reunion. Have you ever talked to Anna about that situation?
Yes.
You know, about that like legal stuff, which I'm sure she's so happy to talk about publicly.
Well, you know, the thing about Anna is that she used to practice law. So
yeah,
she, you know, kind of, she understands, you know, where to draw the line, where not to draw the line, you know, with everything that kind of goes along with revealing information on a television show. What I think, and I think she's we've spoken about this several times, because, you know, when I got to Miami and I realized we fell in love, like as soon as we met, like I knew, I was like, she is my person. Like I really loved her. And I would wager to say also, and I told her this, and I've told her this time and time again, the Anna that I know is not the Anna that was present on that show. The Anna that I know is way more outspoken. And I think you get that if you watch this past, this interview that we did. She's way more open and free and fun, but she came across on this during this season as very sort of careful, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Until the reunion. Okay.
Right. And then it was like a completely different
and
person.
And so what I believe happened, and I think she's kind of alluded to this but didn't specifically say, was that she was, I believe, alerted by production to something that maybe Leah was about to come after her with. And so she came ready in case that happened. And there were some things that weren't shown, from what I am told from a couple of different sources, that led to that whole situation happening, which is why the edit looked the way that it looked between her and Leah.
Wow. Do you think that, you know, this is something that Andy has discussed, I think, on Everything Iconic with Danny Pellegrino recently, the idea that, you know, he's pitching Miami season 4 to Peacock, and who knows what that'll be, if it's like a streaming service or something else, you know, if it's like exclusive to Peacock or if it would end up being on Bravo. But, you know, he's been talking about it, and a lot of fans have been talking about wanting to go back to Miami or reinvent Miami. Do you think that that will actually happen? And if it does, are there any cast members that you could see returning? Or do you think that they would start like completely from scratch?
Well, I think that, and not to plug that interview with Anna, but that's the reason why I wanted to have that conversation with her. But I'll give you some tidbits from what I gathered. I do think that it's completely 100% possible that we could end up seeing it at some point in time coming, maybe in 2021. How it will work with the streaming service is a little bit interesting because he did specifically say Peacock, and we kind of touched on that as well. So that's interesting, like, because we haven't heard of that before. But now that we know that there's the possibility of them having streaming shows and then regular Bravo shows, then that opens the door to a lot of different things, right? Now, if they were to bring back any cast members, I think you can go in two directions. One, I think that there's a, you can cast in two different ways. If they were to bring back anybody, I definitely think that, and I love Leah Black. Leah Black to me was a quintessential part of Miami in that sort of older money way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, she was like the LVP, like very alpha, not ready to, not afraid of like getting into the shit.
Yeah.
Like definitely.
I think that
the narrative. Yeah.
They should bring back Lisa Hochstein because she,
oh my God,
we, and Anna and I talked about that as well because she lives the lifestyle. She is, she is the new Miami. You know what I mean? Like she has the money, she has the plastic surgeon husband. But I also think that, I don't know that Anna would ever go back because I think she's in a different space in her life now. But I think that the Anna that I know today would be a better housewife because she's quick on her feet. You know, she's emotional. She reacts to things and she is fiery. You know what I mean? And so I think that the her that she is as a comfortable woman in her skin, knowing what the housewives game is, I think that she would go in and absolutely kill it because she's not afraid to, A, have a difficult conversation and say something that could be perceived as wrong, but then be open enough to have a conversation about why it was wrong and move in a different direction. She's just open, if that makes any sense.
It totally does.
And I think that housewives today versus the housewives from, you know, the sort of glory days that we're all used to, I think that because of the era that we live in right now, housewives have to be open, honest, raw, and real, you know? And I think that's what's going to be the defining factor for the success of housewives moving forward, and specifically if they were to start over in Miami.
It's so interesting you raised the two people I was thinking. Lisa, absolutely, and Leah. And also, Miami's such an interesting cast because as we've seen, you know, politics and housewives has really been, you know, on the forefront of conversation, certainly living in the time that we are. And I think that Miami was genuinely so diverse in every way, culturally, and I also think politically, like Leah's a big Democrat, Lisa's a big conservative. I don't know if she's like MAGA per se, she very well might be, but like having that mix of people and everybody's rich AF, like I think would be fantastic because what we're experiencing right now on franchises, with the exception of Salt Lake City, I think, which is probably one of the most diverse in just pulling a bunch of different ideologies together, is that we have like certain housewives franchises that feel very progressive, very liberal, and certain franchises that feel only fuely very mostly majority, like very conservative. And I love the idea of a show that really feels like it's open. People are open about what they think. They're open about their thoughts, and it's not just one side or the other. And I think Miami, aside from Salt Lake City, is a franchise that could do that very well, very smoothly, where it feels very organic. And it doesn't feel like the only thing that's being discussed, but you do know that who these women are and what they believe. And I would love to see it. I think that Lisa is so fascinating and her social has grown so much in, I would say, like the last couple years. And she has so much fucking money. And I remember that whole thing with her mother-in-law and everything else. She's so interesting. And I love Leah Black. You know, watching her on Flipping Out made me miss her on Bravo. And she's such a superstar that I hope that there is some outlet for her to return. And I do think that if they restarted Miami or picked it up or whatever, at least with these two women, it's like a wink to us that we know two of these people and then they can introduce everybody else. The only other person that I would think about maybe is Adriana. But I think, you know, everything got so toxic with Leah. Also, I don't know where she is because of like the money stuff. Also, allegedly, she like married her fiance before their you know, like it wasn't real. I think maybe her time has passed.
I was thinking about her as well because she's, you know, fiery. She had that huge moment with Joanna Krupa, who is who would have been one of my other choices, but you know, Joanna doesn't live in Miami, so I don't feel like she really represents that. I would probably put her in Beverly Hills. Because I feel like Beverly Hills could use an injection of something else. But Adriana, no, because I just felt like I didn't like this whole idea that, you know, she kind of tricked us all with this whole fiance and then this whole wedding. Like, just tell us it's a vow renewal. Tell us it's, you know, tell us what it actually is. And I just kind of felt like a lot of times she was reaching for an argument to be controversial. And I just didn't like that. And I think now, as an audience, we see through that.
Yeah. It would be interesting to see just the changes in how these women operate, because they were, it's like a little bit of a callback, but people have been asking for this for years. So I'd love to see it. But listen, this week has been so spectacular. We were given the gift of Salt Lake City. Potomac is once again reaching for historic new heights. It has felt so wonderful to have only two franchises on the air, but to have like such fantastic franchises, and to really see that in answer to the question, is there a future to Real Housewives? Salt Lake City is saying, like, not only is there a future, but it's better than a lot of what we have seen in the past. It feels like the production company, Shed, whomever, certainly Bravo, did such a fucking good job casting this show, editing this show, shooting the show for what seems like 8 years, because they have content from 6 months ago that they're just going to reference in a 2 second little clip of someone picking up a shoe and saying, are you an 8 and a half? I am. God bless. Like, the fact that they can throw us these little delightful moments in a series premiere of a brand new franchise that was like instantly iconic. I mean, if Bravo had Rotten Tomatoes, it would be 111% rave. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know a single person who didn't become immediately obsessed with these women. And if someone didn't, I'm sorry. I don't know. We need to have a talk. Like, or maybe we need to social distance, because I don't know. I like can't imagine it. I've seen it 4 times. You know, I can't get enough. I'm so proud of myself for being able to know the difference between Meredith and Lisa. Like, there is so much. Like, when you have identical twins, not since New Jersey season 5-ish have we experienced this. It was just fantastic. So what were your thoughts going into watching the premiere? And what do you think about this new chapter for Bravo?
You know, going into it, I was excited. When I think last year when I first heard Salt Lake City, I was like, what? Why? Yes. But then I thought, I've always wanted to go to Sundance. I love the snow. I love the mountains. And then I started following like Housewives accounts. I think it was Housewives of SLC on Instagram. And I was like, I want to know who the cast is. And I started following potential cast members and all sorts of things. So I've been invested for quite some time. And so kind of seeing the trailer, I was like, okay, I'm officially excited, because one, I knew that I would not be able to watch OC. So for me, it just was like, okay, this is going to be a breath of fresh air. And then as little details started to really kind of come out and I could see the characters and that sort of thing, I was really getting more and more and more excited. And what I also loved was that, you know, Bravo put a lot into the marketing for this show. And I thought that it was really amazing to see, as well as the fact that it's a very diverse cast. Like, it's a cast of women and it's a cast of characters that I just was like, this is insane. So when I saw it, it makes OC and Beverly Hills a little bit seem antiquated. You know, these women brought serious fashion. There's so much that I had to process with this because I felt like, as from a reality TV show lover's perspective, right? What I pieced together as I watched the episode, and I had to watch it twice. My only gripe is that it came on at 10. So the first time I watched it, I was like half asleep. The second time, it's late.
You should flip it. It should be Salt Lake City and then Orange
County.
Exactly.
It's so late, but I was like committed. Mm-hmm. So I had to watch it again. And so I watched it the second time. And what I noticed was they did something that was really cool. And I felt like it was kind of callbacks to several different shows. I felt like they had filmed so much prior to the actual start of the season that it almost gave these women, whether they really knew each other or not, a little bit of history. And so this was smart, because then what it became was the sort of two big beefs that we have, and I guess the main one was with Jen and Mary, was from an incident that occurred off camera that we will likely never see, reminiscent to Kyle and Camille Grammer from season one of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, which was so iconic.
Oh my God, yes.
And then this argument gave me Giselle and Karen vibes from season one, episode one of Real Housewives of Potomac. So it's almost like they took, or even take it back further, Nene not being able to gain access to Sheree's party, season one of Real Housewives of Atlanta. And so it felt like, they're paying attention to what really sells a first episode, a first season. And it's always interesting, and I find these incidents to be the best, when an incident happens off camera, so we have to determine whose side we're on and how we're going to view the characters. And now it's a little bit unfair to the characters, but it's more exciting that way because it feels like a mystery to us.
And it also shows that, like, you don't need to have an explosive moment. I think the best moments on Housewives shows are these moments of, like, micro shade, where it's like a micro aggression, but it's done as like a slayer. I mean, these women say these things to fuck with each other, or they say something that they don't even realize is shady, and then someone else is like, you hurt my feelings, and so they double down. Like, I had heard, so I got a couple weeks ago, I had heard from people, because I always take my sweet time to watch because I'm a nightmare. I had heard from people, they were like, there's going to be a fight in the last 10 minutes. You're going to lose your mind. And I thought, oh, it's going to be like a big thing. There's going to be some like crazy thing. I wasn't even thinking it was going to be funny. I was just thinking like there's going to be an explosive moment. Yelling at each other about you smell like hospital, which first off, not a hospital or like this specific hospital, but just like hospital, capital H. No one could have ever guessed it. And then you couple it with Mary's confessionals. And I have watched that scene so many times where she's like casting blame on this poor woman who had to get her legs amputated because of diabetes. And she's so disgusted at the idea of it. And she's like, who even gets sick at 60? Drink more water. When I tell you I died in that moment and my soul left my body, which I'm assuming is similar to going to Pentecostal church with Mother Mary, I was taken out. It's like the quick cut of Jen being genuinely upset and like reading it straight, which is out of character for her. Like, Jen's like putting on a little bit of a show for us. She's a little bit performative. So, but she's like keeping it very real. Like, this woman raised me. She's my mother. And then you juxtapose that. And she was like, I was in the hospital with her. She was like very sick. You juxtapose that with Mary, like putting her fingers to her nose and being like, pee you. Why don't you eat broccoli? Like, unbelievable. Like, and so funny. And then when fucking Jen's friend comes over, and I think this woman is going to shy away from it, this Carrie, and she says, like, did you say that? Mary and I are on the same page. We both think that Carrie's going to, like, pretend, or man, and Carrie looks at her dead on and is like, You better fucking believe I say it, and I say it again, stupid cunt. Are you kidding? I was rattled. Like, these people, that woman, Sarah, who I put on Instagram. Oh, my God.
Sarah was... why didn't they cast her?
Talk about a slither in the room. I'm getting Potomac vibe. She comes in with that, like, Saved by the Bell-esque, like, off to the max or whatever. Max and Nista, possibly, probably not. Just coming and happy. And then she realizes, like, it might not be. Like, I can't. How can you not love this show and love these women? Mary is, I don't want to say what I almost just said. Mary is iconic. Mary's historic casting. Did you read that Reddit thing about Mary, by the way?
I don't know what was on Reddit, but I know what was on. I'm friends with Monica, who runs All About the Tea. It wasn't even what was in the article. It was the dissertation comment about everything that's gone on in the church.
Yeah,
I went down a rabbit hole for about 30 minutes with that.
I mean, I read it in full. It's like a little executive success program to me when you get into, like, there's like some Nexium vibes there. Like, when you get into the minutiae of Mary's business scenario. I mean, like, I know we're all talking about her interesting how we met style New York Times vow section of how she married her step-grandfather, but how they run their businesses, and she's maybe forcing, like, the tithing of it all to maybe, like, 50%, and that's maybe how she's able to wear the Versace runway. And maybe they're, like, controlling of their congregants' marriages and relationships. It's not great, but it adds to her mystique. And I can't, I have no choice but to stand. I have no choice but to stand.
Yeah, there's all kinds of, you know what I love about a housewife that becomes iconic to me is the confusion of
fraud.
It all. You know, that's the reason why Denise forever will be one of my favorite housewives, because there was so much confusion with her. And it's even more so with Mary. I couldn't even believe what she said in her confessional. And I'm like, this woman is a pastor.
She says that she is a pastor. Apparently, she is literally a pastor. It's so the cognitive dissonance of it all. Again, record-breaking casting. Like, you have to. And I know people going in, again, we're thinking, like, Jen Shaw is going to be the one. And I don't think there is a single weak link in this cast. I think everybody is so crucial. All the different personalities. Meredith being very cool and kind of above all of this. Whitney being so happy to be there and wanting to share her story and seems like just very genuinely lovable. My soul sister, Heather Gay, love of my life. I know she is going to be the unproblematic Shannon Bedore that we need and deserve. Like, there is so much there to unpack that even somebody like Mary, who doesn't know how to turn on Instagram Live, you know, Bravo did these Instagram Lives where they paired Salt Lake City Housewives with, like, iconic housewives from existing franchises. And I haven't gotten a chance to see the second day's worth, but I watched the first live. Like, I was in the thread, like, just sending nothing but love, which is what we need to give Salt Lake City, like, nothing but love. But, you know, watching Mary ask us repeatedly, is she live? And then saying, like, I don't know how to end this, forgetting what franchise Teresa was on. And also words explaining to Teresa how she married her grandfather, which, P.S., we might want to remember to include step. And, like, words are important. And watching Teresa's face, who has no idea who this woman was, has never watched a single Housewives episode, probably including her own, except when she was away at camp. I mean, unbelievable. These women are already, I swear to God, a part of our lives. Like, I can't imagine life before Wednesday night. I really can't. This is so important to me. Like, Salt Lake City is everything. Salt Lake City is where we need to be, how we need to live, and how we will understand more about ourselves.
Yep.
Honestly.
I agree.
Like, I don't even know what to say. I mean, the dynamics are really interesting. I think that, you know, the Heather stuff, I just find fascinating. All of these women from backgrounds, many of whom are like OGs of the Mormon church, several of whom have been excommunicated or left. Salt Lake City, when they first announced it, I had a similar reaction to. I was like, Salt Lake City. And I just assumed it was going to be all Mormon, very white, and kind of like one personality type. And I couldn't be more wrong. It's such a diverse show. These women have so many opinions. The fact that Jen Shah is talking about like racism in her former religion and how that led to her exit, and we're 5 minutes into the series premiere. I mean, this feels like now. It feels so fresh and so classic. It's just like, I'm so excited to unpack it once we get into more stuff.
Yeah, that's why I feel kind of like OC feels antiquated compared to that. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little worried that Dallas will feel the same way.
I can't imagine watching Dallas right now. It seems so tired. They had such a shitty last season. I can't believe Carrie with a K is back. I can't
either.
It's going to show the weaknesses that are inherent in some of these franchises, some of whom have been on for so long and are really struggling, and others just, you know, took off, but maybe for a season. Maybe some of these franchises aren't meant to last forever. And if we're talking about Miami coming back, not the worst idea for it to replace something else. I feel like Dallas is so off where it needs to be right now, and the keeping the cast where it was is so, it just feels wrong to me. I would love to be wrong when the episodes air. I would love to be for it to be amazing, but I just don't see that being a possibility. And then we have Salt Lake City that literally came from the stars. Like, it came from heaven above. Shout out to Brigham and Young, who I learned more about on this week's episode than I have ever known before. Like, I don't see it. I don't see how shows like Dallas are going to be able to survive.
I was thinking to myself, how do you know, because this hasn't really happened, especially with the longer running franchises, how do you know when it's time to end a franchise? You know, that's going to be an interesting thing to sort of navigate moving forward, because unless they do something, I don't know, maybe OC can continue, but I do kind of agree with you on Dallas. That's going to be a difficult one to move forward from, because they've also broken from their typical formula. You know, Dallas needed a villain. You know, and whether she, I don't think, as time went on, that Leanne wanted to be the villain that they needed her to be. And mm-hmm. I felt like they continued to push and poke at her so that she would ultimately go back to that. And I think that that was a tired sort of framework to operate with. And now, what do we have left with that show?
Honestly, the idea of watching another season of Deandra, it just feels like, I don't know, many more cups of ketchup needs to be added to that recipe, because it's not good. When the best thing about you is your mother, that is tough. You know, when she started off, she was such a strong housewife. She came in, I loved her. I was obsessed with her, but she had a bad season, and I don't die for her online. And I just don't, I don't know. I don't know that I see it. I don't see a reason for her to still be there. And, you know, it was like a sign of desperation at the reunion when Leanne said, you know, like, I would love for us to work on our friendship, because she knew that, you know, time was not on her side with staying on the show. And it just feels like time should also not be on the side of Deandra. Like, I think it's like TikTok. I don't know.
Yeah, I think a lot, there's some other problems that arose with that cast. I think that Brandy is problematic to me, mm-hmm. you know, in specific ways. And I don't know. In light of, and I didn't even want to talk about this, but I feel like the elephant in the room is that you had a pretty big write-up in Vice. And I'm not the one, you know, doing the interviewing, but I just have to ask, like, as it relates to Brandy, and then some of the problematic statements that she's made. It's interesting that Leanne was the one who was ousted. Brandy was not. Interesting to me. And then in light of where we are today as a country, especially post-election, and I think your the write-up about you and what the work that you have done in identifying specific cast members who have been really silent these past days, how do you have this cast come back?
Yeah, I don't have an answer. Just to give a little bit of background. So I had seen on social media over the weekend, a friend had posted on their stories, you know, they had come up with a list of celebrities who hadn't posted about the election and saying how damaging that could potentially be in just relating to results that one side is trying to contest. And so this isn't like in normal days where if your guy doesn't when you don't say anything and you have every right regardless to decide how to use your social media and how to use your platform. But the danger that we are currently facing as a country with our democracy at stake. And so I thought to myself, oh, that's really interesting. And, you know, I stalk these women on the regular anyway. I know what they've had for lunch. So let me just go in and see like who's posted about the election results, regardless of who you voted for. I was just curious because we are in such a gray area right now. And there is something to be said for the people who've stayed silent that you can kind of infer as a human mm-hmm. person what to make of that. You know, like who are the people that have spoken out and have not? And it was so lopsided that aside from a couple people, maybe from like New York, New Jersey, you know, all of Potomac, all of Atlanta have used their platforms for social good and awareness and voter registration and everything. And I think the entirety of Dallas stayed silent, as did, I think, the entirety of Orange County. I literally came up with the list and I don't even remember at this point. And what happened was I posted this as opposed to Instagram and got immediately flooded with a lot of hate. People telling me, I got like genuinely vile messages, threatening messages. I was deleting and blocking people every minute of the entire day. A lot of people told me I was a piece of shit. And then when I blocked them, or forgot to block, but like remove the comment saying I was a piece of shit, they said I was a bully for removing their comment, which I still try to understand the cognitive dissonance of it all. but anyway, and then I, unfortunately, a MAGA, you know, I just got overwhelmed. A lot of people were very angry at me for having this conversation, which I said repeatedly wasn't about someone's voting or whether or not they were supporting a candidate. It's just specifically related to acknowledging election results as an American and person with a platform who has every right to say or not say whatever they want. But I just was commenting on it. And a lot of people were very, very angry at me. And I heard from a lot of people who said I was like a vile person for having this conversation. And unfortunately, people, in addition to sending me threatening messages, doxed me. So all of my personal information, my middle name, shout out Amelia with an E, birthday, job, home address, cell phone, email. You know, I have this podcast. I'm so appreciative of people that listen. I am myself when it comes to like parts of my soul, pretty private. So I missed a podcast recording I was supposed to do. I was so out of it trying to get my personal information removed from the internet. And P.S. the account that doxed me several times still hasn't been suspended by Instagram, which is a whole other story. But anyway, so Vice reached out to me and covered the Instagram post and just some more background on my perspective and thinking and the writer's thinking about this election and the world of pop culture and responsibility in between. And you can go to, I'll link to it in the show notes for this episode. You can go to my Instagram to see it. But it really opened a can of worms that I wasn't expecting the like direct liquid hate. But there were a couple housewives who reached out, two from Dallas, who Carrie with a K said, essentially, I don't do politics, which is absolutely her right, but very fascinating when you think that her entire plot on Dallas last season was about her cast rallying around what everyone said was like racist behavior by a castmate. So there's that, but she has every right to do what she wants. And then Brandi Redmond, who reached out and said, I'm not talking about this on my social media, but she absolutely acknowledged Biden Harris. She's the only Dallas housewife to do so. And obviously, Brandi has exhibited a series of problematic behaviors on Dallas, like dildo stuff, obviously, the racist Asian caricature stuff that she did on social, and is very problematic. And she also, I think, deserves credit for being the only Dallas cast member to acknowledge the fact that we had an election and somebody won. So it's tough. It's like it's tough when you look at the future of some of these shows, and it's like many of these women are problematic IRL. I do think it's incredibly important to have conservatives as housewives. I think it's incredibly important. It's also why I love Salt Lake City so much, because I do think that there's probably a pretty good mix on there of conservatives and progressives. And I think that that's great. I love to see that in one show. I do want to understand women's behavior that is separate, but also sometimes reflected from their political views. But to even have that conversation, I mean, I got like dragged. There has been other stuff that I've done on social media and with Andy's Girls that I don't know, where I was like, okay, I might get some pushback for this. But I don't know. I wasn't expecting the level of hate that came my way. And then people who were like, I'm going to punish you for this. I heard from people who said, I'm an Andy's Girls listener. I'm rating your podcast 1 star because I hate what you just did on Instagram. And I'm telling all of my friends to do the same. Like, I don't know. I'm not even making news. I'm just sharing who hasn't. Like, this isn't even the launch of an initiative. This is just a list.
Well, first things first is I think that you are incredibly brave.
I mean, thanks. I didn't know.
But, you know, here's the thing. You're just doing you, right? You're just doing you, and yeah. You're just operating from a place of I want to do the right thing. I want to do the right things, and I want people to do the right things. And anytime you have that level of bravery, people are going to come after you. I think the way in which they've done so is heinous. But I think that also speaks more of that type of person than it does even a political party or affiliation. And I think that was the problem that I think I had with a lot of this is the support of, or lack of, I guess, empathy for what a lot of us have gone through from some of our favorite people is disappointing for a lot of us. And so I think when I saw the list, I was just kind of like, noted, because we live in a different era now. We don't live in, this isn't 2015. As much as people would like for it to still be 2015, it's not. It's 2020. And we're at a point now where I feel like people have to take a stand for what's right. And we want to watch people on our TV take a stand for what's right. And I don't think that this is a Republican or Democratic issue at this point. I think I read this in your post. I feel like it's more of a good versus evil type situation. And so to stand silent when there's blatant evil happening right outside your door is astounding to me.
So I would say I didn't say good versus evil. I think somebody commented on that post.
That's what I was thinking. Personally,
I actually personally don't agree with that in the sense of good versus evil through the eyes of these women. Because I think what's most important about Housewives is knowing that even if I disagree with every single thing that you stand for, I am still empathetic about your journey and curious about who you are. And it was that curiosity, and I'm so appreciative of the of the mazels, but I don't think what I was doing was in any way, just my two shekels, I don't think what I was doing came in any way from a place of bravery. I just was honestly curious, which is sort of like the motto and mission of AG. I really was just genuinely curious because it's a conversation that people are having about other celebrities. And I was like, well, I live in the world of Bravo, so like, let's see what's happening there. I just think it's like, regardless of who you voted for, which is for some people very public choice, but ultimately a private decision, I was curious about, with the place that we're in now, where like our president-elect can't get access to secure information because the current administration is like blocking it because the president's like, do over, like, 1 out of 2, like, 2 out of 3.
I can feel that, but I also think, and I think the experience that I probably bring to the table, I think as a Black man, it makes it a little, it sort of changes things a little bit for me, because it does feel more like a life and death situation. It doesn't feel, again, here's the thing. I don't care if you're Democrat or you're Republican, if you're conservative or if you're not, that has never bothered me. I think it was more or less like, I can't understand how people can remain silent when things are happening in the world that affect all of us, and specifically people who look like me, in such a dangerous way. So I think at that point, for me, I view there is a sort of fight of good versus evil, not Democrat versus Republican, if that makes any sense. Because to me, that's not even what most of this is about. Because
absolutely, completely agree.
You know, it's just that we're in a different time with, during these past 4 years, it has become something else.
I agree with you. And I think just like some of the, and people getting mad at me for saying I was a horrible person, or saying you're a piece of shit, or how dare you even post this, and then getting mad when I like delete the of course, you're telling me I'm a terrible person. You're raising private information. Like, babe, it's a friend of the show, Pet Shop Boy, sells merch I'm obsessed with, but like one of his favorite phrases that's become iconic is like, I can explain it for you, but I can't understand it for you. I can explain it to you, but I can't understand it for you. And that's kind of how it is. Like, if you were going to come at somebody with hate in that way, there is going to be a response, and it's probably going to be revoking access to that person's, like, whatever. And so that was a little bit of a learning lesson for me. But I do want to pivot a little bit, because you're bringing up empathy when you're looking at people and understanding people's stories and the position that you're there, where they're coming from, regardless of how you feel about how that is being expressed. Right. And I can't think of a franchise where that is so clearly important, especially when there's like elements of some of those ingredients missing, than Potomac right now, where, you know, you had this interview with Karen Huger earlier this week that was so phenomenal, but where you were talking about how Karen is looked at in the group as being not just like the mediator for everything happening with Candace and Monique, but also the person who is saying your behavior doesn't provide you the entirety of your identity.
Right.
And regardless of however I feel about how someone is reacting to things, i.e. the altercation, I'm not just going to drop them because I care too much. And so I'm curious, knowing, first off, how did that come about with Karen? Because I'm like, but I also want to know, like, what's your perspective watching all of this play out with, you know, Monique and Candace, and even with like Wendy and Karen, and Karen and Giselle, where a lot of it seems to come down to, I'm either reacting to feeling frustration or hurt, or I have zero interest in understanding the other side.
I think first thing is, I think that Karen may have seen some of my videos like last year. And so when I met her in January at my friend Riley Knox, she was doing a show here in DC.
Oh,
yeah, that's my best friend.
Wait.
So.
Oh my God, Riley Knox is everything.
Yeah, she's
everything.
Awesome. But she had a show, and then Karen came to the show, and she was, and I'd done a news show earlier, and they asked me who my favorite Potomac housewives were, and I was like, I said, at that point in time, I was like, well, obviously, you know, I said I love Giselle, I love Karen, I love Monique. And so, you know, she was joking with me about that, and we just had like maybe a 15-minute conversation, and you know, it was kind of like a really good dialogue. So I was like, I need to talk to her at some point. And so we were actually supposed to interview like around the time of the altercation. But I guess maybe, you know, the network kind of wanted to pause on the amount of talk coming from, you know, everyone.
Yeah.
And I respected them for that. I totally, listen, whatever they want, I'm giving it.
Mm-hmm.
And so luckily we were able to schedule it this week, which I think was a better time because I think that it allowed her voice to be heard outside of any other, you know, crazy noise regarding the altercation that we were facing about a month and a half ago. Now, with regards to the ladies on the show, here's what I think, especially with Karen and her stance on it. You know, when you look at a person, you don't look at a person in terms of one event, right? And I think that this has to be where a little bit, it kind of goes back a little bit to what we were talking about earlier, but in a different way. I think that just because someone does something that you don't agree with or something bad, that is not the totality of that person's existence.
Amen.
So there's that. You know, I want to start off by acknowledging that. And I think that that's something that Karen has done very well with saying, listen, I'm going to look at my friend as a whole person versus the one thing that she did wrong, because that's a very dangerous place to exist, especially in the world of housewives. Because when you do that, you have to also recognize that there will be a season where you do something completely wrong. It's happened in every franchise with just about every character at some point in time. And so I think that even in real life, we have to look at how a person moves and not just the one thing. And I feel like with Candace and Monique, I think what a lot of people are looking at is there's this incident that Monique had, and then there is the totality of the things that we've seen from Candace. And while what Monique did was wrong, she reacted. And we've all been there in some way, shape, or form. Maybe not to that extreme. I know that I have, you know, in the past, I've been in fights when I was younger. So to me, this was nothing. I got it. I understood it. Hey, you pushed me to the edge, and there I went. But for a lot of people, that's not their experience. So I get that. They don't understand how that works. But then I also look at, and I hate to say this, I think that Candace is a beautiful girl, but I think that she, hold on.
And that's when you know you're about to get fully tracked.
But I think that, you know, for her having done work with the Obama administration, for her to have been in this pageant world, you know, it's the things that she has said, done, like, and just repeatedly said to people that were insightful, that were just kind of just not emblematic of someone who is as beautiful as she is. I want to contrast those two things. They don't match, and I don't understand it. I don't get it. So when I look at how she's moving in general, through life right now, I think that it just, for Karen to still want to embrace her as well, I feel like that's grace. Karen is exhibiting grace that the other ladies are not able to even come close to. And I think that with Giselle, her problem with Monique stems way back to when she first came on the show and she told her that she had four homes. That is honestly, I feel like at that moment, mm-hmm. Giselle had made a decision in her mind that I don't want this girl. No. And Robin, you're not going to like her either.
Oh boy, I agree with everything that you're saying. And I think that the other women in the cast looked at Monique and said, you broke a code of conduct. That when you put your hands on someone, you went too far. And what Candace has been saying publicly, legally, whatever else is, she was essentially abusive to me or she assaulted me or whatever else. And she's not wrong in the fact and in the sense that, of course, she was like physically harmed. She was aggressed. She was it happened. We saw it. We saw it on TV. Candace seems to think that's like all or nothing for Monique, that if anybody empathizes with her, sympathizes with her, brings up moments where Candace herself has not been great, hashtag the butter knife, she's obviously easily triggered and very upset. The problem with that argument, aside from the very foundation of it, is that specific to Candace, she has broken the code of conduct so many more times than Monique. And her vile and abusive use of social media and interactions with people in the Bravo community is beyond what I have seen, to my knowledge, from any other housewife of any other franchise. And say what you will about some of these women and how they behave online, I have never seen to the extent of what Candace has done and the harm that she has caused people who, by the way, didn't sign up to be on reality TV, but are being abused by a real housewife in real time to an extent I have never seen before. And the harm that she has done, if we're going to talk about like the idea of harm that these women have decided based on respectability politics of what Monique has done to the Black community and to Black women, the harm that Candace has done in body shaming and fat shaming and transphobia and homophobia that she purports to take responsibility with while continuing to attack people on publicly and privately is like unbelievably ghastly to me. And what has happened with, I believe, a friend of yours, Kyle, with the Black Socialites, who very tragically passed away recently. I don't know anything about their interactions, Kyle and Candace. I try to kind of stay away from that aspect of housewives and like that stuff because I try to focus on like the psychology minutiae area of it. But regardless of what their relationship was like, putting aside any kind of vitriol that they had, for a housewife to go on social media knowing that there is someone who's struggling with health issues and to publicly wish for their death is, I don't know, I don't understand how that's not an immediately fireable offense. I think that is so devastatingly cruel and disgusting. And you know that that's happening as you're watching these episodes and you're watching Candace be horrified that Monique is able to keep a job. And it's like, sweetie, why are you? Like, I don't, why, if the network, which I understand is being, not withholding, but is like keeping the cast close because of all the things with the altercation. As you said, I completely empathize and agree with that. And I actually think you're, Karen was even in a much stronger place in which to have a conversation with you because of everything that she said in the weeks following what happened. But like, why is Candace allowed to do these things? Because on camera, it feels like the behavior is so toxic that I've said repeatedly, I think this is going to be her final season and it's not going to be by choice. But off camera, I'm like, this is really not good. And it makes me less curious about Candace's journey and her post-it notes, because while I am happy that she is able to, at some base level, feel safe, very upset at her creating a community and environment of unsafety online. Like, oh, the hurt of it. It's not great. It adds another layer of conversation, but it's one that is really tough to describe. I mean, you have a much more, I'm sure, intimate, you know, perspective of this because of your relationship with Kyle and the Black Socialites, who's the person that we're talking about. I mean, what do you think? I mean, that adds something when we're talking about, you know, did Monique go too far? Like, okay, but, you know, there are other people here that we need to discuss.
So it's hard to talk about because I think that while I won't, you know, obviously I think that Kyle had his own health issues that were already present. And I think that my belief is that Candace also knew about those things is what kind of makes it all the more kind of egregious in my eyes. So I understand that they had a contentious relationship on, you know, on both ends. However, I do think that there is a place that there has to be a line that you just never cross in your life, right? That's just us as people, as decent human beings. And that place usually, I mean, that line is we normally as decent human beings never just wish death upon anyone. I just feel like that's the thing. And the fact that he passed is, it's unfortunate, but it goes back to basic human decency. Like, we don't wish death on anyone. You know, there's people who have done crazy things to me. I don't wish death on them. I move on. Like, it's honestly, I think, but that comes with maturity, right? That comes with us knowing who we are, knowing that no matter what someone says about us, it doesn't really reflect who I am, because I always feel like my character speaks louder than anything else anybody else could ever say. And I think that's what this all boils down to at a certain degree. And that's why I say, when you look at the totality of the two women involved, Monique did something that was wrong. But when you look at the totality of who she is as a person, you'll see a good person who did something wrong. Ultimately, when I look at some of Candace's behaviors, I'm seeing a lot of bad behavior. But I know that there's a good person in there. I have to believe.
Well, I think that there's a broken person.
Absolutely.
You can empathize.
Absolutely.
With. Yeah.
And so these behaviors are coming out as a result of that brokenness. But until you're interested in dealing with that brokenness, then it's never going to be a situation where we get to see what I believe the network wants is a story arc. So similar to Dorinda, you can't arc her story if she's not willing to get over the hump.
And take responsibility.
You know what I mean? Because the easiest thing for Dorinda, and I just equate the two, she's one of my favorites, still is. I think that had she come to the reunion humble, apologetic about things that she had said and done, it would have resonated with network executives and viewers a little bit better. And I think she would have been right back in everybody's hearts, back on the screen this season. Similar to Candace, what happened afterwards were we got two different Candaces. We got the victim, but we still got the villain. So you can't play both roles. You can't, because what it looks like then is a villain playing a victim role. Because still those broken behaviors are still being exhibited throughout the course of the show and offline.
It feels like she's not allowing us to be on her side.
Exactly. And I feel like there are people who want to be. I don't want to. None of us want to dislike a character on the show. We might have a moment where we're like, oh my God, they're frustrating. But ultimately, similar to like a Mary, we can recognize, wow, what she said was some wild stuff. But I still like her. We want to have, you know, we want to have that experience. But she makes it hard for us, a lot of us, to have that experience because she refused. Listen, here's the thing. What would have been amazing is after that altercation, listen, if you're going to be a victim, fall out on the middle in the middle of the floor, go to the hospital, and then learn from that event, right? When you're in therapy and the therapist says, do you take any responsibility for this? At a certain point in time, a mature person says, I did egg her on. I was in her face. I could have handled things before the demise of our friendship better so that we never lost that communication because she was my friend and I was over her house with my feet up on her couch. We were good. That was like my big sister. You know what I mean? And I feel like that's how you win an audience to your side, but you have to genuinely feel that.
Well, and that's the thing is like Dorinda didn't genuinely feel like she has a problem, which is why I think the network did the right thing in saying like, we need to do a little bit of a pause. And because the worst case scenario would be she comes to the reunion to say something she doesn't believe. And then the next season she doubles down.
Exactly.
Like, that's not going to help her in any way. And with Candace, it's like, I do want her to take responsibility, but I also feel like she is not a person who knows how to do that. And she is someone who reacts in ways in which she wants to add on as a means of self-defense, seemingly ways in which to harm. And the fact that on social media, she was apologizing for saying things that were homophobic and transphobic and saying how she understands how words matter. And then privately was saying really vile and abusive things to people who are on her side, but just saying like fat and body shaming isn't great. I had to block her. Because she said, which I'm not going to get into and I'm never going to share, but she knew that I have a history of disordered eating. And I said publicly that I didn't know what was going on with her and Kyle. This is like several months ago. But just as somebody who has struggled with disordered eating relating to some trauma that I've experienced, I don't like body or fat shaming. I don't, it does so much more harm to so many innocent people who are in no way involved with whatever war is going on online. Mm-hmm. And she said some things to me intentionally that were very abusive and I didn't tell anybody about it. And unfortunately, my personality, which I'm working on, is one in which when someone is coming at me in that way, I de-escalate. So I try to reason. I apologize. Even when someone is abusing me, I'm like, we can find middle ground. We can find middle ground. And really what I should have done is just like blocked her from the start when she started sending me messages. But she continued sending stuff specifically because I have an eating disorder that she wanted to take advantage of to make me feel bad. Because I said, well, body shaming isn't great. And this isn't somebody that maybe is able to separate her behavior from the show with ways in which she is using that behavior against people in the Bravo world. And as someone who experienced a very small, like a 0.00000000% of what she probably gets on the daily, and I'm sure people are coming at her and saying terrible things, it is really painful when people are attacking you and attacking your character. However, for her to respond in the ways that she has, where she's actively trying to use the most sensitive spots against you in order to make you hurt, especially when many of those people aren't even doing it, they're just saying body and fat, that's literally all that was said, it's not great. And it doesn't seem like she is in a place in her life or maybe just in her core where she understands the damage that she does because of her words. It's something that Karen brought up in your interview with her, which again, guys, I can't more highly encourage that you watch. It is not to say that one equals the other, but there is a reckoning that I think a lot of people are having with Candace that unfortunately is related to her behavior on show, but on the show, but a lot of it is not, where it's like, you need to be you need to be more grown up. You are a grown ass adult who in so many ways is so well spoken and has a lot to offer, but you are damaging other people on your climb up. And that's not, this is not the franchise for that. This is not the ways in which she should use her platform. The timing of her apologizing for the previous homophobic stuff with what she was doing still continuously in real time that to this day she hasn't apologized for is really gross. And it's just like purely not good. So it's tough because like I've had experiences with her, but I'm still relatively open-minded and I've tried to just kind of separate that because the Candace on TV is different from the Candace IRL, and the purpose of AG is to like really try to focus on the stuff on TV, but she makes it difficult to empathize with her because she repeats really poor behavior over and over and over again,
and she doesn't see it. And the unfortunate thing is that, you know, I feel like two things. One need only, if she wanted to really play this game, you know, the way that it's supposed to be played. I remember Dolores telling Whitney this during the little Bravo exchange that they were having leading up to the premiere of Salt Lake City. She said, you know, don't respond to anyone who says anything negative about you online because, you know, it's just not a good thing to do because it'll turn into something else. And I think that that's a lesson that she hasn't learned, which is very odd because her co-star, Giselle, is very good at, you know, taking the hits and rising above it, not acknowledging anything that's happening on social media, blithely living in her own little world, which is healthy. But I think that's also something that comes with age. The other thing is, I also think that, and kind of not to take anything away from Giselle and Robin, but I think that Candace being and them having Candace's back is easy because it means that they have to do less work because they know that Candace will always, on the show and off, be the person that they need to react, to get things started, to really keep up the drama on the show. And they can sort of sit back and manipulate things behind the scenes and sort of make this an easier situation for themselves to keep the show entertaining. That's honestly my assessment of why they really have her back so much, because I think ultimately they know that she is incendiary. They know that she is problematic, but I think that it suits their purposes a little bit more to have them, to have her on the show.
And it's so unfortunate. It just makes me like kind of sad that she does these things online, because I'm like, this is such a good season.
I know.
She like ruins it. And I'm so selfish. And I'm like, keep it in the game. Keep it on the field. Don't go into the locker room and fucking whatever, destroy some whatever. Keep it as a part of the game, honestly, because she would have so many more people who were able to remain empathetic. And I think honestly that in the show, she deserves that, you know, as Monique does, as all of these women hopefully do. But it's hard because sometimes when you cross those lines, it's like, I still selfishly want to unpack it, but I also feel like she's not necessarily worthy, you know, of that kind of dialogue.
Not at this point now. I think, you know, hopefully in a couple of years when, you know, I said this on another show, I think, I don't know that she's had her Ashley moment yet. And I think what I mean by that is, I think that, and it doesn't have to be motherhood, it's just probably some life event that happens and that sort of just changes you and opens your mind. And I think that with motherhood, Ashley changed a lot. She still got a little bit of mess with her, but that keeps her interesting on the show. But I think by and large, we've seen a different Ashley. And I would have liked to have seen this be maybe that life event that sort of changed the direction for Candace a little bit.
I think that you're totally right. I also think that Ashley is so much more vulnerable, but as a additional change to that, it feels like because of that vulnerability, her husband has regardless of whether or not this is like subconscious or not, taken advantage of her feeling like she will do anything to protect her family.
Right.
And I think that there's so many aspects of that that she should be commended for. Mm-hmm. But I was so appreciative of that moment where Robin was like, it is not your job to care for this baby and this husband and watch over every single thing that he does, because he needs to be responsible for his behavior. And P.S., you also deserve to be taken care of. Like, there's such a split right now with Ashley feeling like, I need to take care of this man and also this baby. And it's like, where is he in there? Aside from him calling back and being like, I'm sorry, he needs to do a better job, because right now, and she needs to do a better job, hopefully with time, of knowing that she deserves so much more than what he's currently, you know, giving her.
That moment with Robin was such a, I don't want to call it a nuanced moment, but it I think it was a moment that might have been overlooked by a lot of people. But I felt like it was a moment where I think Robin probably shines the best. Mm-hmm. is that story that I don't think we've fully gotten from her about what that experience has been like as, you know, someone who has gone through that. And I felt like we really missed out on an opportunity to have that, to hear her have more of that discussion alone with Ashley and walk us back through what really happened back in the day with you and Juan. I mean, we know surface level, but what was the experience like for you?
I would love to know. That's such a good question. I would love to know.
Hopefully we get that at some point.
I mean, this week really on Potomac was all about like who's holding each other accountable and who does one person think is like going too far. I mean, that moment where Robin wasn't just remaining silent, but actually very respectfully and like a real friend who's also filming a TV show held Giselle accountable. And Giselle's response was like, what the fuck? Like, you're supposed to be my ride or die. And P.S., part of being ride or die is like slow down the car, you know?
Oh my God.
You're going in the wrong direction. And I think that's something that Giselle, I do think that Giselle gets it. I do also think that Giselle was like, I thought we had a...
Right.
You couldn't say that to me off camera? Come on. I'm different than all the other people coming. Was great. I think that like this is, you know, Karen is having such a triumphant season, but also Robin is just continuing to bloom. And I would like to know what happened with her and Juan, because I do think that like we're understanding so much more of her. I think that there's a maturity that can happen off camera, and I think that there's also just like a comfort level with being on the show. And I think that Robin is in a really comfortable place right now and able to like say and do things that just show what a confident person she is and how much she has grown. That just shows like the power and influence that she has amongst these women, because she's not someone who we have seen hold Giselle to task a lot. And that might be because they honestly do agree with each other on a lot of stuff. They have every right to. So, but it's just so wonderful to see her have that mm-hmm. moment, because I feel like, you know, that's really important. And, you know, having a friend and being able to take that friend and say, in a group setting or not, and say like, here's an example of something I don't necessarily agree with or whatever, I think is really important. It does also just beg the question before we wrap, you know, in the interview with Karen that I've mentioned 500 times, she mentioned some stuff with Giselle, and I mean the Giselle and Jamal stuff and whether or not that's real, and Giselle seemingly discomfort with being held to task, and also the question of whether or not Monique and Ashley are currently ride or die, both because they genuinely care for each other and also because there is some sort of an alliance, because Monique stood for her last season during all of the, you know, husband assaulty stuff, groping stuff. How much of this do you think is related to optics for these women of supporting each other, making sure, you know, that they themselves look their best, versus like a trust game of like real genuine friendships with stakes where you want to make sure that your friend feels protected?
I think that I will speak about people in general when they come on reality shows.
Please.
I think that there are different types of people that come on reality shows. I think that there are some who came to perform. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They came to perform. They came to put on a show. And I think for those people, it's easier to sort of build alliances and to sort of strategize how to maneuver on the chessboard. Then I think that there are people who come into a show and they just want to be themselves. They just kind of come on and they're just like free and I'm going to just open up. What I think has happened is I think that, and I'm not saying this because, you know, I know her personally, but I do think and believe based on the character that I've seen, like her actual character as a person, I think that Monique came onto the show sort of like, you know, hi, here I am. Hi, my name is Monique. You know what I mean? Like, and I think along the way, hoping to build genuine friendships and, you know, has had some pitfalls and, you know, taken some wrong turns, but ultimately is wanting to have a few genuine friendships. But I think that the hard part is knowing who and when to be genuine with, right? So, and that's kind of like in real life as well. It's kind of like going to work at a job. Like, these people are not really my friend. I might find one good work wife or husband out of the bunch, but in by and large, these people are not my friends. So I think, I mean, look at it. You just got to look at it like that. So I think that the relationship from now looking at it on the screen, especially last week's episode, I think that the relationship with Monique and Ashley has developed into one where there is a lot more trust, particularly for Ashley, because she saw that when given the opportunity several times, Monique has not used something that she knew about her as fodder for the show. And so I feel like there's a level of, oh, this is a real friendship. So I'm going to have her back too. That's kind of how I feel. And I feel like even with Robin, with Giselle, I don't know what Giselle's motivations are, but I do believe that with Robin, she looks to Giselle as a friend. Because the way she approached that situation, I thought was what a real friend does. I'm going to hold you accountable for what I see and what's happening. And nobody, it didn't even feel like she attacked Giselle in any way, shape, or form. She just simply was honest. And a real friend will also come back around and say, hey, listen, this is what I'm thinking. I didn't want to, you know, take you down. It wasn't that type of scenario, but this is me being real with you. And you need that. And I think ultimately, Giselle knows, okay, I need it a little. I need it sometimes. I need it sometimes.
And I think it only, like, helps to grow and it's hard to say, like, improve on their friendship because it seems like they have such a great friendship relationship. But it just, it shows that they can both be, like, equals in this relationship and also, you know, in their time on TV. You know, like, Robin deserves her spot in the sun and I don't think that Giselle, regardless of her being like, oh, Shannon said that, you know, like, I think that Giselle gets that and respects her too, which is why, regardless of how you feel about like Giselle's behavior this season, and God bless her for it, P.S. and I can't wait for the reunion, which filmed yesterday. I it's really appreciated, and especially on a franchise that's having like one of the best of all time.
Oh, absolutely.
And so we'll see. Have you heard anything about what happened? We do have to wrap, but have you heard anything about what happened on the reunion yesterday?
Not yet, but I'm very interested. I'm gonna be trying my hardest to find out what I can.
And guys, the number one place to find that out as soon as you listen to Andy's Girls or maybe during is visiting at DJ Richie Sky on Instagram and his YouTube channel, same handle, because it's fucking amazing. And your interviews are so good. And I'm so obsessed with you starting them with like this like medley of wonderful moments of you like dancing for the cameras and like living your best life. I love it. I want my own. Someone come over here from 6 feet away and do whatever needs to get done. Because I'm super into it. And I had so much fun with you when we did a little Kiki on your channel a couple months ago. I don't know, yesterday. Every day is a year. So you guys can look for that on Richie Sky's YouTube channel because it was so much fun. Richie Sky, tell the people what you need to say. What have I missed? What do we need to talk about? What is coming up? What Housewives can we look forward to you kikiing with next? Anything that we need to know?
The Heather Thompson interview will be out today in just a few minutes when we get off the line. Well, I guess by the time they hear this, it'll already be out. So you guys can check it out on my channel. I've got a couple more coming out, and some people that I have on my wish list that I want to talk to. And I think that, that's about it. I mean, I guess just follow me on Instagram and on YouTube at DJ Richie Sky.
And I'm going to link to your interview with Karen in the show notes for this episode because it was so amazing. And also, speaking of wish list, I do a holiday card. Last year, mine was like me and Portia, and I think it was like in honor of the Holy Spirit or something. I forget what it was, but they're always like really crazy. And while I was offline yesterday taking a time out from Instagram, I thought of the theme for this year's holiday card, and it is so fucking wackadoo. So you need to send me your address. And guys, don't dox him, okay? That's what we do here. You are gonna freak out when you see it.
I will send you so my good. Address as soon as we get off the line.
Amaze. Guys, die for you, love you. Be kind to each other online. My God. If I haven't blocked you, you can find me on social at Dame Galley, patreon.com/Andy's Girls for exclusive bonus episodes. Which one of which I'm recording very soon. So that'll be up this weekend. And slide into my DMs. Let me know your thoughts and feels about the Vice piece and anything else, which will be in the show notes for this week's ep. Thank you to Alex and the team at Vice for that article, and to all of you for listening and supporting me, regardless of whether or not you agree. And Richie Sky, I die for you. I can't wait to talk to you again next week because you're coming back every week for until the end of time. I forgot to tell you that.
Ow, I'm here.
53 cents. All right, guys. Hope you're having a good weekend, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.